following program is brought to you by your friends at Podcast One.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in One offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening, smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
It's the Stone Cold and Jackal Show!
Really? That's what you came up with for our intro?
All right, dude, here we are yet again. Me and Stevie D. What's going on, dude?
Ah, life is good, man.
Yeah, it's a good day. You just give me one of your protein bars.
It's trying a great
to make,
day.
Trying to keep me.
Well, you're because you're like I'm hungry before our next guest.
My blood sugar went down.
So I said, "Here, have one of my protein bars. It'll make you feel good. It'll make you actually maybe want to work out."
Dude, I think is this a muscle or did I?
No, that's you just cramped up from holding your arm.
Okay,
up
that's
too
what
long.
I figured. It was a new sensation. It was either a new muscle or muscle fatigue.
There was definitely muscle fatigue.
Because
you held your coffee in your left arm for like 2 hours today.
I did. Oh man, I'm out of coffee. Gosh darn it. Oh well. Well, buddy.
Yeah.
This is exciting.
This is it. This is,
dude,
listen.
We have the best job in the world. Is this a job? I'm not sure this is a job.
This is not a job.
Not a job.
Because you got to get paid.
Oh, right.
But the fun part of this is that we've
There's only one fun part?
Well, there's a lot of fun aspects
the
to
fun
this.
The fun parts.
But the
some of the parts.
The great thing is there's such a wealth of guests where
yes.
we work.
Yes.
And there's only a few legends.
Oh, there's a difference there.
There's a big difference. If
yeah.
we can look up what legend, the definition is.
I think there'll just be a picture of this guy.
This guy's going to be definitely pictured in the Legends yearbook for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah, and if you can't hear him breathing already.
And he's already getting ready. He can't wait to talk to us.
I know.
And we're just going to introduce Ken Schreiner, who plays the best.
Infamous
Scotty Baldwin.
What's going on, man?
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show. Most of the legends have passed away.
Ken.
Well, we got you just in time then.
Yes.
I'm how many years do you have left, Ken, before you you meet the other legends in heaven?
Oh. Well, you know, I have I'm narrowing in on 41 years. August 2nd, I turned up in Port Charles, 1977.
Wow.
Yeah.
So just tell us about that, because you like to remind me. I got on the show in 91, right?
Yeah, that's yeah. when you came to my room and you said, I need to understand a few things about working on a soap opera. You had your little notepad and your little
oh,
pencil.
That's so cute.
He came. He's looking for, you know, little things, and he'd write down my little
Your tidbits. Yeah.
Tidbits.
Your kernels of knowledge.
Yes. And he would scurry away.
Totally would.
Yeah.
Scurry. But honestly, you know, we did. Ken actually was a, you know, he kind of mentored me. When I first got here, he was just like, hey, come on, let's just follow me and shut up and just figure it out and I'll teach you. And then we actually play a lot of basketball. You know, during our breaks.
You were a basketball player, kid?
Oh, that's why I have this bum ankle right now.
All these years
of sports. They said, did you play a lot of basketball? I said, I certainly did. You know, we would go every lunch.
Wow.
Here or was it a different studio?
Here.
No, it was here. Yeah, we'd go to lunch. We'd go play basketball.
Where was the hoop?
Billy Warlock we'd go play with, too.
Up the street at that school up there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then we would run the stairs. We had a chin-up bar up on the roof.
Oh,
there was
gosh.
A lot of in-house. Well, you guys still have a gym here.
Working
Did
out,
you
yeah.
hurt yourself playing basketball with Billy Warlock?
Billy Warlock and Andrew Stevens.
Because here's the thing. I busted my Achilles playing basketball with Billy Warlock. I think that's the common
Uh-oh.
Theme here. Don't play basketball with Billy Warlock.
Where did you play with him at?
I was on a soap cruise in Mexico on the boat. I think Entertainment Tonight Canada has it on tape.
How does that sound, Ken, to be on a soap cruise?
Horrible.
That sounds like a horrible idea.
But it depends on who the other soap actors are.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. That's true. But so Ken likes to remind me, look, the guy's 1977. It was him, Laura, him, Jeannie, and Tony.
No.
Oh, see, now I'm going to be correct. See, I always tell the story wrong. Go ahead, Ken. Were you here first?
I was here first. It was Jeannie and I. They put us in a shed. A hurricane blew through Port Charles and wiped out all the old actors, and we emerged.
Are you serious? There was a purge?
That's like
merged.
No, I know. But there was a purge. They got rid of all the old people?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was like a reboot?
Did a lot of people die in the hurricane?
Yeah.
That was for real?
Oh, yeah, that's what they did. And then they...
Did you guys like emerge naked from like under a thing?
No. We were just in this... we came out, you know, like... And everybody had gone. And then there was the new... We were... live at that time on tape. It was like
oh wow.
And then the producer Gloria Monty took the show over, and they were at the brink of cancellation.
Oh gosh.
And yes, I know.
This is dire.
And then they decided
they needed some help.
They said, we've got to throw the ball to the youth.
Yeah.
Which I was at the time.
Right. Yeah. You still have that energy.
Yeah, but now they got to go throw the ball back to the youth that's grown up.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yes. So, anyway, yeah, that it all changed, and then Tony Geary showed up, and it all went to hell.
wait, hold on, we jumped ahead. But you were on some. I remember you telling me you were on a TV Guide cover, or you were on some cut back then. It was a big deal. I can't remember what it was.
Tiger Beat.
No, that is not.
He's done that too.
Not
did
a
you
big
have your
deal, dude? You said you were on two shoes,
pool
two
parties?
Shows. You were doing some. Nothing? This isn't ringing a bell?
No, I was on GH for 3 years.
Yeah.
Jackie and Jeannie and I, and then Tony came on, and then they were going to kill him off, but another actor got a job for a nighttime show, so he left, and they kept Tony.
Wow, isn't that crazy how that happens?
And then I made a deal to go to New York to do Texas.
That's okay. So this was the thing. What was Texas? Because not saying you're not a big deal, but you were a big deal in daytime.
In 1980, I was the highest paid actor in daytime television for that deal that took me to Texas, to NBC. It was the worst decision I ever made, but profitable.
Okay, so what was Texas?
Texas was a soap opera that was a spinoff of Another World, which at the time I wasn't aware that it was going to go opposite General Hospital, which put me in competition with my own self. So nobody cared about the Jeb Hampton character. They said
Jeb Hampton.
That was your character. Well, in Texas, Jeb Hampton.
Jeb, yes.
Yeah. Oil guy?
I can't remember who he was. It was never defined. That was the problem.
Yeah.
So how many shows did you do there?
I did a year there.
One full year of a soap opera.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It went on. I think it got 2 to 3 years before they canceled it.
So you left after the first year?
Yeah. Yeah. I realized that I had made a
grievous mistake.
When I saw Tony and Jeannie on the cover of Newsweek, I said, I think I made a mistake.
So then you came running home. You came scurrying back.
I did, yes. And then Gloria, who, I forgive him for ditching out. And then, do you want to come back? And then that was the big, at the wedding, there I was. I was stashed away in the trailer. This was before social media, and they still stashed me away like it was a surprise. They didn't want anybody to know until they trotted me out, and I caught the bouquet. There is no wedding. Fight ensues.
Dude, that's one of the most watched television events.
30 million, something like
that?
In
the history of the world.
Yeah, but when I punched Luke a year earlier, this time when everybody watching... I got punched out. Oh,
so,
man.
So whatever the count was then, it was millions then, right?
Oh, yeah. There was still that. By that time, it had hit, 8, 9 million. And by the time the wedding, it hit 12 million.
And by the time you got punched, it was 50 million.
It was a lot.
Yeah. So you didn't like that.
No, people still, they remember the bouquet catch. Thank God they don't remember the knockout punch.
They didn't, not the catch of the punch.
Well, there was a fight. We had a decent fight before he got, of course, got the best of me.
That day.
But there's been many fights
there's
since
been many
then.
Days, yeah.
Yes. And, you know, I'd like to still go over to Amsterdam and you know, punch him again.
Off his rollerblades.
That's worth the airfare right there.
Yeah.
Off his rollerblades.
Before you were on GH, like, before 1977, what was your life like?
I was a contract player at Universal Studios back. It was the last year of the contract system. They paid you a salary every week.
Wow.
And then you were on call. Like, my first day, they called me and said, "We got a scene. You're going to be a blind soldier with Gregory Peck."
That's
in
pretty
MacArthur.
Cool.
Then you're going to be in the bionic, the $6 Million Man. Then you're going to be with Raymond Burr.
Oh,
so
my
I
gosh.
Was with all these great TV personalities that were.
And you weren't auditioning at that point.
No.
You were in the system, so you just got assigned.
They would just call up and say, "Oh, okay, we need you. You're going to be the kid that was in the park that was beat up." And Raymond Burr comes over. And, you know, there he is, my idol, Perry Mason.
Yeah.
You know, and now he's. This Kingston guy, and he couldn't have been nicer, Raymond Burr. Big as a house, like a big refrigerator. I just looked up and said, "Wow, Raymond Burr, Perry Mason."
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Would there ever be competition, like, with your friends? Like, "Hey, they're not calling me as much as they're calling you," that kind of stuff?
Well, no, because, you know, you were getting a salary every week. So,
sure.
And, you know, they were coming up with stuff that would...
If they're paying you, they're going to use you.
Yeah. Actually, the contract players were kind of hated. Because they kind of had first dibs at the stuff that was coming up. And then if the producers of the show said, "Well, we saw him, we didn't like that, so, you know, we're gonna go elsewhere." So the contract players was kind of forced down the producers.
You know, that's interesting.
Yeah, we got him, we're paying for him.
Yeah.
Put him in there, but we don't want him. You know,
He's
no good, he's not right. But
right.
It was kind of, you know, that deal where, and that lasted 1 year.
Wow, that's fascinating to me.
I know, it is so
crazy,
man.
But that was like 1975, and then they abolished the whole
contract system.
It was all over then.
And how did you get to be a contract player?
I had auditioned with my girlfriend at the time, and which was a mistake because she goofed up the scene, and then they were more interested in her than me, so I kind of crawled out of there. Then 6 months later, I was up for the part of Nick Nolte's son in Rich Man, Poor Man, and they screen tested me. I went down to the wire, and they said, "We're going to go with Greg Henry because he's a little more experienced and older, but would you be interested in going under contract?" So, of course, I hushed up that I'd already been in here.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I didn't want to remind them. I already auditioned. They weren't interested. I said, "Oh, yes, I would love that." And then so there I was with the same woman who turned me down. Now I was,
now
hello.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah,
do you remember what you were getting paid?
$450 a week.
Wow.
Yeah, it was big money then.
That's huge money.
Yeah.
That's amazing, man. And where did you grow up?
Here.
Yeah.
New York. Florida.
Oh, wow.
I was born in New York, and then...
Was your dad in the business?
Yes, my dad was in show business. He had a show on in the 1950s and 60s. He had a show called Two for the Money.
Oh, wow.
Which was the whole thing that my brother and I were twins, fraternal twins, so he actually got Two for the Money, so we were wheeled out on stage.
Oh, that's funny.
So, like, theoretically...
Every episode is a gag, or just once?
No, the one time only.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, theoretically, I've been on television since 1953.
Wow. That's
awesome,
man.
Yes.
That's awesome. And your brother, Will, he's a stand-up comedian?
He had a beautiful run in the 80s and 90s. He did Carson, probably Johnny Carson, 7-8 times. Had his own show.
He had a late night show, a talk show, right?
He had an afternoon show.
Afternoon,
yeah,
sorry.
They didn't put him at night. and then he directed his film that he wrote and directed.
Were you in that film?
I did. I played a very pivotal role.
You did?
Pivotal. Yes.
Pivotal.
Jerry the Clerk. my brother and I were shooting. I forced him to give me a part. I was in New York doing
awesome.
As the World Turns, and I'd come down to Fort Lauderdale, and I said, "Let's talk about my part."
Yeah.
"What part?" I said, the part. And so we sat down and we concocted about, a little scene where this information is passed on. And the actor who was starring in it, Luke Wilson, was a little late that day, which sent the director into it. And so then my brother had nothing to do, and he decided that he didn't like my costume that I'd picked, my hairdo. And before we actually shot the scene, him and I were in a fist fight in front of everybody.
What?
Fucking fighting like the old days, you know, like, no, I'm not doing this character with my pants pulled up here. I've got my own guy that I've created for this. It's my movie. I'm the director. So it was horrible.
Oh, my gosh. Have you guys worked together since?
No.
No.
it's
That's, so basically, it's all Luke Wilson's fault because he was late.
Well, he was late, yes.
And he started the whole thing.
Yeah, it's his fault.
Yeah, otherwise, you know, my guy that I created would have been fine. But
totally.
You know, but you know, I got to
And
be
it
would have
been
guy.
Funny, though, too, because you're very funny.
Well, we did a little fly swat bit in the thing. There was, a, you know, we did some bits. There was
You like bits.
Yeah, bits. Well, you know what Buster Keaton said, right? What
did he say?
Props are your tools. You should treasure them. Fly swatters, flasks, you know, combs, any, you know, thing that you can work in.
That's what I'm trying to teach my sidekick here.
Well, it's funny because, like, you know, on our show, a prop, if you are given the space and time to use it in, but sometimes we'll have props here in a serious scene and you can't necessarily do a bit. But what I love about watching you is that you can work those moments into a courtroom scene or something.
Oh,
where,
the courtroom.
Well, because, I mean, as a lawyer, you spend a lot of time just, like, telling people things that aren't it's not meant to be necessarily funny, but you have a great way of lightening things with your just who you are and your ability to. But and you love props.
Well, yes. I'm my two favorite props, of course, have been the fly swatter and the flask.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you can work those in, it's a good day.
The Scotty worked the flask in?
Yeah. Well, I used to have a whole prop box.
With your name on it? Just yours?
Yeah, yeah. I'd say, bring me the box. Bring me the box.
Not the box.
What's in the box? What's in the box?
I'll tell you what's in the box. There's an apple, yo-yos, little hand grips, flasks, of course.
That's
flasks.
Awesome.
And that's all in this show? Or just a box that...
It was in this show.
Yeah.
But, you know, they said, we're not... We lost the prop box. It's gone.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, Scott... Ken...
That happens all the time, doesn't it?
Yeah. When I was when I first got here, it was a couple years in, and you're like... Because he always has he's always thinking about how to make it more interesting, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know if you remember, Ken, but you told me, you're like, you need like a secret. You know, you need to be interesting. I go, what do you mean? He goes, you need to like have a little book, like a little journal that you pull out in the scene before someone gets it. You write something down, you put it away. And I go, what am I writing down? He goes, who knows? No one cares. They just want to know it's a secret. Like, what's he doing with the thing? What's on the paper? What's in the book, right? And I thought it was so interesting that he did it, and I actually ended up doing it on Young and the Restless.
No kidding.
You see? It, it came
I
back
kept
around.
Writing in there like, what's that guy writing in the book?
Did the booth go, Steve, we didn't actually give you a book to write in.
Well, actually, they gave me a good, nice leather-bound prop book that I could – you like that? So I could carry with me. But it's fun, man. And and by the way, how with your brother, you can't have an argument with your hair because it hasn't changed.
I've tried to maintain the certain look, you know, that I...
And let's just clear it up now, because you accuse me of this often, that I've stolen your hair look.
It's pretty identical. I mean,
If he cut into it, it
Bradford, well, I'm just that saying, is not
if
even
he has the widow's peak, we call it.
Right.
Yeah, you have different hairlines.
Some people would call it a receding hairline.
Nope, that's not a widow's peak. It's just got shape. Your hairline has character.
I don't know if I
is
can.
What it is.
I don't know. I don't know if I can agree that our hair is the same.
Well, it goes the same direction. It just goes straight up.
It's up.
It's up.
It's up. And, you know, when I ride my Vespa, it's permanently up.
Yeah, and that's great.
Yeah. Because it's just like a...
So you spend a lot of time. I know you're here in California. I know we used to hang at your awesome bachelor pads. But you spend a lot of time in Florida.
I do spend time in Florida. I grew up in Florida. Went to high school down there. And my brother lives there. I had a boat there. I have a Vespa there.
The boat the toys. You get some.
The boat's gone now. Thank
did it sink?
No, it was
sank his bank account.
Oh, the boats. You know, I've had a lot of boats, and you'd think you learned your lesson about boats.
Yeah, they're not good investments, are they?
No, they just you know. So I had my brother look after it, and I said, "Look, you've got a free boat. All you need to do is just start it, write it once a month. And every time he'd start it and take it a month, I'd get the call. Oh, hey, that right motor's a little... I said, okay, there's $5,000 coming to you. Nothing. They just... Boats have to be used.
Yeah.
When they sit...
Not good.
No good.
No good.
But you guys aren't boaters, so...
No. Yeah, my grandmother had a boat, and every time we used it, something like that would happen. I remember the engine literally blew up when I was water skiing one time. It just... And we open it up, and sure enough, there's just holes in it. It literally blew up, and it sank. It sank. We were riding it, and it started sinking. We evacuated. It sank.
It's like Gilligan.
Yeah, it's just terrible.
Did you
watch... And my dad was in the Navy, and still.
And it still sank.
Sank.
Take it on water. Bradford, did you? Are you a skier? Did you do a lot of this water skiing the old school way with slalom?
The slalom? Yeah, I got pretty good at it for a kid in New Hampshire going behind a 9.9 horsepower rowboat with a stick on it. I wasn't Busch Gardens level by any means.
Yeah, but that's all. Nobody does that anymore. It's all wakeboarding, right?
Does
anyone water ski anymore? Really?
Not in the old fashioned. There's the new toys. It's the wakeboarding. It's stuff like that. We have my wife's family has a house in Lake Tahoe, so we see a lot of the water sports. And yeah, there's very few slalom water skiers. It's
so
more, yeah.
When Fonzie jumped the shark, was he on skis?
Yeah, he was on those old, you know, the two skis.
Right.
That's it. That's it.
Yeah. But yeah, I used to water ski home from high school. You know,
do you commute on water skis?
Well, I went to a school in Fort Lauderdale. It was right on the water. It was across the street from the Intercoastal. So we would go by boat. We had little speed boats.
Ooh, yeah.
And then after we got out of school, we'd throw the skis in, put our little swimsuits on, and water ski back home.
Oh, okay,
that's crazy.
Yeah. So when did the have you always had a Vespa, or is that a thing later in life?
No, I've always had some form of motorcycle. First a small little Honda, and then I graduated into choppers, and then Harleys.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then
I thought a Harley was a chopper, no?
No.
It depends if you chop it. A chopper is – that was big in the 70s where you put the forks, and then you put the little peanut tank on, and you extend the forks, and it becomes a chopper. Yes, they've chopped many of Harleys.
Okay, I didn't know it was a verb. I thought it was just a noun. I didn't know you could chop.
It is a noun and a verb.
Okay.
Yeah. He's chopped it. It was chopped.
It has been chopped.
It's a chopper.
Has been chopper. Chopped.
Yeah. And then I went to Italy to teach for UCLA, to Florence.
To teach acting for UCLA?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, awesome.
For the extension program. I think they regret it because...
What happened? What'd you do?
These American kids were... They were not there to... They were taking
a semester abroad.
A summer. It was 6 weeks
in
Florence. So I only had to do it like when my students started bringing glasses of wine into my class, I realized I don't think they're serious.
Yeah.
Anyway, I saw this entire scooter life in Italy. Everybody rides a scooter.
Yeah.
Vespa scooters. They're just everywhere. And I said, geez, I got to get one of these. So I rented a scooter there, and I went all over Italy. And then I realized that that's the lifestyle, where these, you know, your little baguette hanging out of your thing. Your So I realized it was time to put the Harley and the, you know. Like,
wow, that's a heck of a downgrade.
Not really, because it's a whole different. Think of that type of life.
Yeah, no, it's cool.
The Italian guy with the with the hot chick on the back and the little baguette.
Did that?
And the
is
wine.
That what happened when you got a Vespa?
Yeah, yeah.
It's easier on your hips too. You don't have to mount it. You just kind of sit down.
You just kind of slide onto it. Yeah.
Did you get a hot chick when you got the Vespa?
Yeah, the chicks come around with the Vespas. Yeah.
They're just there for the baguette.
The baguette.
That's right.
The bottle of wine.
Sure.
So, yeah. So, riding a Vespa is a way of life.
Mm.
And once you get hooked on them, you can't, you're like, okay, there's the car. There's the Vespa. I can park the Vespa anywhere.
Right.
I'm going to be circling the parking lots for
your car.
A spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, therefore... Go with a Vespa.
So you have it in Florida. That's your.
I have two of them. I have one here, one there.
Now, is there a, is is there a culture of Vespas in Florida where you are? Or are you the guy with the Vespa? Do you know what I mean?
No, there's you know, they in Fort Lauderdale, they still rent scooters. It's kind of like lost in time. I don't know what their insurance policies are because, you know, these kids come down on spring break and they're,
oh,
you know.
Oh, that sounds.
Yeah. And they're on these scooters. Yahoo! And, you know, you go.
Every spring break, is there just a grisly Vespa
accident?
I'm
sure that. Uh-huh. Well, there's nothing that they talk about, but I'm sure that the emergency hospital is full of a lot of, you know, broken
Vespa-related injuries.
Well, scooter-related injuries.
Yeah.
You know, the twist and goes.
Oh, yeah.
The Vespa is what we call the Rolls Royce of scooters.
Well, absolutely.
Yes.
So, Ken, who were some big influences for you acting-wise or comedy-wise?
Well, acting-wise, I am a firm believer that all actors, young actors as well as old actors, should watch Turner Classic Movies where you get a real education in fast talking pacing of acting. Screwball comedies were, you know, invented in the 40s with Cary Grant. They're specifically called screwball comedies.
Yeah.
And it's a pace and a sense of humor that you can learn, and it's all about pace, which a lot of young actors don't know anything about.
Yes.
Which was drilled into our heads when we were Gloria Monty produced the show. It was, you know, she would literally come out and say, I have turned the station. You pick up your cues, and this is your fast, smart people. Pick it up. Pick up the pace. Pick it up. So, you know, if you watch the old movies and the screwball comedies, you can learn a lot from, you know, those actors.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. I often see Will DeVry watching Turner Classic Movies in his dressing room, so you got to him.
No, he knows nothing. He's in there he's in there watching, you know, Bonanza and Big Valley. He doesn't.
He's watching Haas.
Haas Cartwright.
Come back from the freaking.
Yeah, that's his idol, Haas Cartwright.
That's awesome.
So how many years in the show now?
41.
41. 41 out of 55 ain't bad.
No.
That's pretty amazing, right, kid. Yeah. That's pretty amazing, man.
Yeah.
Did you think you'd be here for 41 years?
Well, no, actually, because, you know, I left, came and, you know.
How many times have you left?
Oh, a number.
Sure.
Some of them I was shown the door. Some of them I just said, I got to go.
Right.
I'm done here. It just goes on. And then, you know, you just think, wait a minute, the Scott Baldwin. But every time I left, I took my wardrobe with me so I could keep him alive instead of when actors leave the show, there's a third floor at the studio here where they hang the wardrobe of all the actors that have left. So they're just in there hanging.
Oh, that's
I decided
creepy.
To take my costumes with me and keep, you know, I'd put on a Scotty suit and I could be Scotty Baldwin even though there was no cameras.
So right. You get the Scotty suit.
I kept him alive. You see how I kept the guy alive.
Yeah, that's just, that's a good exercise.
Yeah, you got to puff him up, you know, every once in a while and say, I know we're not on camera, but we can still be Scotty, right? Yes, we can. We can do it.
So you weren't taking those wardrobe items with their blessing, though?
No, it was out the back door. I put the wardrobe in the trunk like a dead body, which it was. At
right.
That point, you know, when you leave the show, you're just a Scotty suit.
A Scotty suit.
That's right. Yes.
What, Steve, it's just a stack of black T-shirts.
Thank you.
What entails a Scotty suit?
It's it's just a nicely tapered, tailored suit with a pocket square.
There you go.
Have a good wardrobe.
You don't wear ties very often, right? You're more of an open collar kind
of
guy?
Well, I like to keep the Frank Sinatra look going. Unless I'm in court, you know, I keep the tie because, you know, it's always a nice look, the open collar suit.
Well, it's work and play, really. You can go from work to play pretty quickly.
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, I'm such a fan of the older movies, and those guys were always well-dressed.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I should learn a lesson from my friend Ken here.
Today's episode is brought to you by middleofthemagictravel.com. You know, we come in contact with a lot of people, and I think we're Disney fans, and we talk to a lot of Disney fans on the road, and I just took a Disney vacation. And
I was just at Disneyland also.
Yeah, and the details can sometimes be overwhelming.
Okay, first of all, before we get into this, what's your favorite, yours, yeah. Bradford Anderson's favorite thing to do at Disneyland?
Ooh, Pirates of the Caribbean and then eat.
At that restaurant?
But not the Blue Lagoon? No, no, not Blue Lagoon.
No.
The restaurant in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, that's the one, though.
That's the one you can never get reservations
that's
to.
That's the one that they were like, no, we don't know who. Yeah. We don't care who you are.
So if you try to go to Disney World or Disneyland and you don't have dining reservations, you're not going to get them. You can't get them there certainly week up.
I was really bummed.
So when you're planning your Disney vacation, you want it to be magical. And you want all those details taken care of. And sometimes it helps to have your own personal Disney concierge. And that is what middleofthemagictravel.com
is. And I had no idea. I had no idea this even existed with Middle of Magic Travel. Because, look, we work for Disney. This company's Disney authorized
to set
up. They are an
authorized Disney vacation planner.
Disney vacations everywhere. Resorts, cruises. What are some of the places that they set
Well,
up?
Don't forget Disney's Aulani Resort in Hawaii. So
well,
Disney
Cruise
Lines.
That's number one on your list, apparently.
Absolutely, it's number one on my list. So not just Disney World and Disneyland, but Adventures by Disney, Disney Cruise Lines, of course, Aulani in Hawaii, and the beach resorts in Vero Beach, Florida, and Hilton Head, South Carolina as well.
Yeah, and here's the greatest part, especially me being so busy, is I don't have to plan anything.
Dude,
and they plan everything.
Everything.
Special people have special diets, special needs, families. I mean, it's just everything, which is awesome.
And if you book your package with them, their fee, there is no fee.
Yeah, and that's probably
Can you imagine having someone plan your vacation for you in concierge level service?
Yep.
And there is no fee.
That's what they do.
That is amazing. middleofthemagictravel.com/Steve and Brad to begin planning your magical Disney vacation. We can't wait to go back. Maybe we'll see you there, and we'll all have dining reservations.
That restaurant's really cool, though.
Dude, the Monte Cristo?
It's awesome.
It might kill you.
you might have a heart attack.
But you will die happy.
That's it.
middleofthemagictravel.com/Steve and Brad. You're the kind of guy that wears a blazer on a plane, right?
I do. Because
yeah, you got to.
I figure a stewardess is going to be nicer to you.
Right.
If you show up on her flight, if you show up in short pants and a t-shirt, she's like,
get the freak out of here.
Dress for the part. Dress for the part you want.
I was wondering if there's anything up in first class. Get out of here with your short pants. Go away. Now, you're in a suit. Yeah, right. You're in a suit. It's like, excuse me. Oh, yes, sir. How can I help you? I was wondering if anything was available in first class right this way.
So that's how the upgrades happened?
Yeah, that's how they used to happen.
Yes, right this way, Mr. Baldwin.
Yeah,
yes.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't think they just offer up first class to well-dressed gentlemen anymore.
You never
–
not anymore, no.
Not anymore.
No, we don't get first class anymore.
No.
Those days are over.
Well, they are over, but you know, we used to parade ourselves by – The ticket agents,
yes.
And the other spotter
hoping
would
to
say,
be recognized.
The spotter would say, number two, I recognized you. Good. Then you go to number two. Hi.
This is so true, dude.
Yeah, that was what we did.
You taught me that.
Yeah.
Listen, you got it. This is what you do. You want to get upgraded? You got to walk back and forth. And that's what I did. I'm like, all right, I'm walking back and forth. And then I didn't have a spotter, though, because I was some broke kid. So, but I saw the lady, like, you know, you just see the look, like, she recognizes you. Then I'd go on that line. I'd go, is there anything up at first? Or, oh, yeah, we upgraded you. And I'm like, yeah.
Wow.
Scotty Baldwin.
That was done before I
came
along.
Well,
yeah.
You know, I tried this a couple of weeks ago. You know,
It wasn't on Spirit Airlines.
I must have been on my, 25th pass. And I was like, I'm going to give up. Then I said, well, if I can't, I'm going to go try to do the Admiral's Club thing, the private club where you go, I'm not sure. Did ABC General Hospital call ahead? I'm supposed to be my name at the...
did you do that, Ken?
I just did it a month ago.
Did it work?
It did.
It did?
It did, but only because we had a fan.
Oh, that's great.
Otherwise, I've tried it many times.
That's great.
Sorry.
Like, wait till you're on Scandal. Then they
showed me the door many times. Back in the elevator, sir. There's no name here for you.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
In the old days, would the network call ahead to airport clubs for you guys? Or well, is that always just a gag?
That was kind of a gag. But they did.
No,
you
they
used
did.
To be able to
yeah.
do that.
Yeah.
They'd say,
dude, they had so much more. I think they had so much more power then.
When there was only three networks or whatever. Yeah.
Well, just the flight, the ticket agents.
You mean when the ticket agents had more ability?
They could upgrade you. They could get you in the club.
Because not everything had to be computerized. They could just be like, take it.
Yeah.
Here, right.
The seat's open. Take it. There's no one on a wait list. It was,
right.
I mean.
Yeah.
You know,
when you have only three networks and you have a soap opera that 10 million people are watching, odds are
right.
you're going to find one of the ticket girls
or
the stewardesses that also can say, you know, they did that to me coming from Europe. They said, sir, could you come with us? And I said, what did I do?
Right.
And I had no idea. And this was like 6 years ago. And he said, I think we have a better seat for you. Next thing I know, I'm up in the first class, but I was convinced that I was being thrown off the plane.
Right, these days.
Oh, how times have changed.
Yeah, right. This guy's bothering me. Excuse me, sir.
I thought, lady have a problem or something?
Right.
Is she moving my seat? Well.
Oh, yes, well, yes.
Now we're talking.
That's nice.
Especially on the international flights. That's that's a big deal.
Yeah.
No, you were just coming back from punching Tony in Amsterdam.
Yes, I was.
Yes.
I was, yes.
So, Ken, over, we don't really, on this show, we don't really talk about the show all that much, really. But over the years, who were your main staple love interests on the show?
Well, you know, I've had a slew of them.
Okay, just calm down.
Okay. you know, Scott Baldwin
was it Laura first? Was it Jeannie first?
Jeannie, and then Bobby, and then, you know.
Is that when she was a working gal?
Yes. When she was trying to break up, she was from the wrong side of the tracks. Actually, Steve, do you remember there was a cover of me and Robin Mattson, Heather Weber, and I had her in a sort of a Clark Gable pose on the cover of Soap Opera Magazine, and you... All you could see was look at your dirty fingernails, and you would show everybody.
I said this.
Yes, we were like you look at your fingernails. Look how dirty they are.
How do you even remember this?
Well, because you make fun of me. You've been making fun of me.
that's not true.
And I tried to explain that I was working in my garden.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Do you have a garden?
I don't have a garden.
Okay.
But there are two very well-known slobs that live, that are in General Hospital, that have the worst dressing rooms. And there, for a while, it was me until Steve came on.
Right.
As you can see, look at this.
Oh, it's a star.
It's Pigpen and Pigpen's brother.
Yes.
For sure.
Yes.
That's true, though.
Pages. True. Our pages would just be static. In the old days, we'd rip our pages out because we'd have got a whole script.
Right. So you just rip it.
There would be pages just floating in
piles of.
It was like Sanford and Son when you went to our rooms.
Yeah, like a little junkyard.
That's what. As soon as we opened the door, it's what played. It's crazy, man.
Yes.
So you didn't answer my question, but cool. So you said Jackie and Jeannie.
And then it goes on.
Yeah, I know. It goes on forever.
So what were love scenes like back then? Were they still the montages? Would it be music? Like how has the love montage evolved from the late 70s to now, would you say?
Well, you know, they just would put more and more candles. You guys have all done your fair share.
Well, I've done my fair share. He has not.
I have not. Thank you for assuming that I have, though. I appreciate that.
I thought you had some stuff with Max, you know?
We had one.
Well, yeah. One, Ken. One.
And that was that.
And that
sufficed.
Was it.
That
they
was
saw
sufficient.
That.
They said,
and that was it. It was
it.
Done. It was done.
Well, I'm glad to see you guys are, like, taking your act on the road because it's a good act, you know.
Yeah,
well, I was going to tell Bradford, I've been telling Ken, like, this guy should do stand-up comedy, right?
So, Have you ever been on stage by yourself telling slinging stories?
At the fan events where I have captivated audiences.
Well, sure,
but
yeah.
To go to a comedy club and trot out any kind of material, you kind of got to have the audience already in your palm. You know,
well,
I'm not a
sure.
comedian. You know, comedians come out and they tell jokes.
Sure.
Right.
Comedians act funny. Comics say funny things.
Mm-hmm. True.
And then you've got humorists that then are able to weave stories that seem to have
like a Spalding Gray kind of
guy.
Like
like old Will Rogers back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we walk into a lot of friendly rooms that are going to enjoy what we have to say because they know us, right? So, you know, the quote-unquote comedy show that Steve and I do, you know, yes, it's funny, but it's funny because they know, they have the context for everything that we're saying.
Right, they got it shorthand, so the material, it doesn't go, you don't have to go a distance to pay off the joke.
Right.
Correct.
Your setup's not long
at
all. But, you know, thinking about this now, Ken, just sitting here, it's like, man, and I know you have way more stories than we're even going to be able to get into today, but it's like, you know, I know they're doing a lot of these events and the GH Fantasy stuff, but man, I think you and Jeannie should do something where you just go tell stories about GH, right? Because you guys have been on together so long and through the decades, you can really tie together a great 1 hour show of stories and back and forth with you two. And I think it would be so cool.
I'm doing the General Hospital Fan Club weekend. I'm doing a thing with Lynn Herring. We're doing a little, because she's got some good stories.
I bet.
Yeah, last year I did it with Jackie because we had some great stories.
I'm talking about going on the road, man.
Oh, the road.
I'm talking about you need to go. You need to be a road dog. Get on the Vespa.
I don't know. Jeannie would never want to do that.
You don't think so?
I don't know if she'd get on the Vespa.
Start in Maine. Isn't that her?
Yeah, she lives up in Maine.
Yeah, so start in Maine and just get a tour bus.
Dude, we
come down
the East Coast. You're already there, man. You should do some of those.
Yeah. We go, but it was, you know, when we started and we got our first new little cars because we were on the show for 6 months and we thought, I think this might work out for us. We were in Florida once after about the first year and a half. We went to a restaurant. We were down there. She was visiting somebody and I was down there. And I took her to dinner and we were at a table. And they said, some people would like to get your autograph. And we looked over, and there was a line that went all the way downstairs and outside and around the block.
Oh, my God.
And I said to Jeannie, I think we might be doing something right. So that was like 79.
Wow.
And then, you know, it just kept getting better and better that people kept tuning in. And we were like, you know, it was it just kept catching on and on and on.
Yeah,
and on.
But I think the fact that I know you guys do the shows where you answer questions and stuff, but you guys have such a wealth of just knowledge and stories that you can make it a show. Well, this is what you were born to do, Ken. Come on, man.
Well, you guys are on the road right now, so, you know.
There's always room for more. Always room. But anyway, you know, it's just a thought.
When you started back in 77, what were the days like here?
You rehearsed, blocked, and then they did a complete everybody on stage at 1 o'clock, 1 to 1:45 dress rehearsal, and then there was a few notes for 10 minutes, and then they went back and every actor was in every set and they would go from set to set and they didn't stop except for the commercials.
So you were live to tape. So it would air live on the East Coast?
No, it would.
Oh, they would just tape it live and then.
Yeah, I don't know. They might have been a week or two ahead, but they, as far as the show was finished at 3 o'clock, there was no editing.
Right. It was just what it was.
What it was. And if anything happened, like if a set fell down or somebody just, you know, completely.
Really lost it.
They would then stop and they'd have to go back and start the act all over again. So all the actors that had already got through their stuff.
Had to come back, were
still there, like, we got to do it again. And
then
someone went up on their line and couldn't fix it. You had to go back and do the act again?
Yes. Yeah. But that's why it's been instilled in soap opera actors that have been around that you're really good. You're really good for one take. That's all you really need. That's all you really want.
Yeah.
If you get it out, especially if you've got a lot of dialogue, you know, because it's, you know.
Were there a lot of monologues back then?
Yeah, there was plenty of, you know.
Yeah. Well, this guy in the courtroom always has pages.
Yeah.
Pages of stuff.
Yeah. Lawyers speak at length.
Yes, they do. And the words.
The legal jargon.
If it falls out of your head, the whole speech is out the window.
Yeah, there's no way in your brain when you're it's not emotionally tied to what you're saying. If you're not trying to, I mean, if you're trying to get something out of your witness, maybe that there is something. But if you're just reciting, if you're just doing exposition for the audience's sake, and it's in a legal setting, man, if you lose yourself, there's no way back in your head, right?
Well, the trick that I've told everybody that's ever has to do courtroom is that what they write, they flower it up with flowery words.
Yeah.
If you cross those out, because those are the words that will fall out of your head.
Yeah. Yeah.
And out goes the speech. If you stick to the facts, what am I really saying? Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, isn't it true that on that snowy evening or that, you know, wistful evening that they would say, what is that word? What is that word? What is that word? Right. And then the speech is gone. And then,
so just stick to evening.
Stick to the facts.
Right.
You know, all the other stuff that they juice it up with, you don't need that. You got to get to the...
That makes sense.
You can re-add it if you want, if there's a good word.
Right.
That you... But usually it's overly complicated.
Yes.
Because they need to cut to all the other actors while
you're
up
talking.
There.
Yeah. Right. They need room to get
during
coverage.
Your speech.
Yeah. Gosh. I used to say then back in the day when I had all these 7-page monologues, one day I came in here and I had 65 pages of.
For one day.
One day. Wow. And a 7-page monologue. And I'd just gotten the script. We would used to just look at the script when we come in because we would had that ability.
You had the whole morning to learn it too, right?
You had a little bit of the morning and then in the afternoon you had to do it. So I was so outraged that they would give me 65 pages and a 7-page monologue that I spent the entire morning trying to track down the writer that wrote it. So I could say, what were you thinking?
Rather than learning it.
Yeah, exactly. I was...
So did that backfire up there?
Oh, it did. Yes, it did. So then I pitched the thing with, okay... Alan, the director we had at the time, I said, which of this is going to be on camera? Because I know you're going to be cutting away. So why don't I just learn the stuff that's on camera? So I was always negotiating for – and then we had prompters too. So there was –
You had prompters available.
There was available. But, you know, if you fell for the prompters, it's like looking at your neighbor's test. Once you start looking, then you're just going for that. Like, I hope that guy's smarter than me because I'm copying his paper. So right. If you go to the prompters, you better know that you're just going to stay with the prompters because you can't just go back again.
Well, you told me the one with Tristan where...
Oh, Tristan. Listen, Baldwin, as I'm sitting here, you need to... I said, you're actually standing, Tristan. Oh, yes, I read it wrong way. Yes.
That's amazing.
That's awesome.
Yeah, no, the prompter's hard because it's like a different part of your brain, right? When you're reading it versus when you have it in your brain. And it's, I don't know, for me, if I'm, that's why I don't carry my sides in auditions. Because if I am in my head and I go up and I go back to the page, I can't get off the page.
Right. You're screwed then. You have to just hope on an audition that they're not, you know, that they don't know that you just dropped half the paragraph because you didn't, because otherwise you've lost your.
Yeah.
Especially when you get older and then you've got to go back to the page and now you've got to rummage for your glasses to read. Now your character is completely out the window. You can just see the windows open. Out you go.
Out you go. Just
hold on one second. Let me grab my glasses.
Let me grab my cheaters.
Let me change the whole guy that I came in with because now he's got glasses. Now he's turned into Mr. Peabody.
Do you still go out on auditions?
I do. Thank you for.
That was a double sided question. How many offers are coming in for Ken Schreiner? How much are you happy just being here?
Who is
how
Ken much? Schreiner? Get a Ken Schreiner. What are the six? What? Stages?
Yeah, it was a get me a young,
young. Get me him. Yeah. A young. Get me an older.
Have you heard this? This
yeah,
this
yeah. I,
and then the final one. Who's Ken Schreiner?
Right.
Yeah. Well, in our medium, you won't ever have to worry about that, sir.
That is for dang sure.
Right, yes. You can just keep...
No, there'll be... Who's... Scotty Baldwin?
Yeah.
Who's Scotty Baldwin? No one's going to forget Scotty Baldwin.
No, I don't think so.
Well, no. Especially, you know, Michael Logan said, and he brought it to my attention, that I am the longest running character in the history of American television because the Scotty Baldwin character started in 1964. I picked him up in 77, so the character still on a television show for 54 years now. I've played him for 41, so the character... So
did it start as a child?
Yeah.
Wow.
He was like a little kid, and then he turned into like a five-year-old kid, and then he was immediately a few years later, you know, aged, and then I came on.
Did they ever recast you at any point, either for illness or for... We can't get Ken.
I'm sorry. There's only one Scott Baldwin.
That's what I mean.
No, they never did.
Yeah.
They threatened it a few times, but
right. Yeah.
We're going to recast you.
Yeah.
No. So that's That if that's that's a historic thing that Michael Logan, the, from
yeah,
TV
Guide,
Guide,
yeah,
he brought it to my attention. And
it's
I
pretty
said,
cool.
How can I make that? What can I get down the longest running character in American television? How can I? What can I do with that? Nothing.
Yeah, well, there's got to be, you know, how, like,
there's
got to
be some way
there's
be
like
they
a
could cash in on that. You know?
Or like at least one of those things from the city of L.A. that says, on the city of L.A., on this day, we decree that,
yes,
you know, like
Scotty Baldwin
and
day.
Give you that nice, give you that nice little plaque.
Yes.
Something.
Mm, you know.
Nothing, huh?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing. Free meal at your favorite restaurant?
Who would be close? I mean, who'd be the close second? It would have to be a daytime character,
it
right?
It would be Jackie.
Jeannie. Or Jeannie, yeah.
Because her character started in 76.
So. Which predated Bobby, too?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So, but you still would have 12 years on her, then.
On who?
Your character, Jeannie. If
yeah,
she started
in 76, and mine started in 74.
No, I know. No, 64.
Yeah, so that's still a pretty wide gap.
There's nobody else who can who could do it.
No.
Right. Like, if you stopped, she'd have to stay on for another 13 years.
Yeah, but I also
years.
Think at 41 years of doing of the same character, even for me,
yeah.
I've even beat Eric Braeden and some. There's nobody.
Yeah.
The only other guy that would be coming close is Doug Davidson.
Doug, yes.
He's in the 40-year club.
He's 40-year. He just,
yeah.
just 40. Yeah, yeah now.
Yeah, yeah.
But you see,
yeah,
when he gets 40, I hit 41. See, I got him.
Yeah, you got him. He'll never be able to catch up.
They can't catch up.
That's right. I know.
You guys need to, like, the guys that have hosted Saturday Night Live five times, the five-time club, you need to have, like, the 40-year club.
There's only two of them.
I know. It's a small club.
They love
you can really get really matching bathrobes.
Well, but if you think about spanning five decades, so I was doing – I was a part of the fashion and what was going on in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, 2000, 2010, and now into the – so these decades of – So that's the the key to keeping a character is you got to keep him progressing. The audience, when I started on the show, there was a guy that I thought that was the highest paid guy. He was the big cheese in daytime, and I asked him. And he lived in my building and I used to hang out with him. And I said, "What is the key?" He said, "The audience. It's got to grow with you. They've got to change with you. They've got to say, I liked him when he had that other haircut. I liked him better now. I like him with the beard. I don't like the beard. As long as they're growing with you, you got them.
Well, yeah.
You know, that's the key.
That is the key.
See,
get
your notepads out again. Where are your little pencils? Write this down.
But my hair has changed for 20 years.
I was implying that perhaps maybe the T-shirt should go.
You tried to get me to
and a nice yellow one. Yes.
No, you can't do that, Ken. He's trying to get me to wear a different. He goes, why don't we mix it
up?
The
mix
other day?
Up.
He goes, why don't we mix it up a little bit? How about a nice dress shirt?
What about a nice,
a
nice little
color?
Pink flamingo?
How about a different color?
Fort Lauderdale.
Honestly, what would you?
Well, Brad, don't you think that he could go after a different color?
I think he could do anything and get away with it.
Yeah, but honestly, what Ken?
Okay, what about if you went something like purple?
Ooh,
so you're not into the yellow or the
yellow.
Like a nice orange. Or, I would be.
I'm not in Key West. Like, you live in Key West. I can't wear those bright colors.
Well, but they're cheery to go against.
I did wear them in the 80s.
You did?
Yeah, it was Miami Vice.
Oh, yeah.
Of course. But, who didn't?
Well, you had but before you became stone cold, you were like, the preppy Jason Quartermain with a little sweater around your neck and
That's right.
Tennis racket.
Loved it.
Tennis, anyone? Remember when you played that guy?
Yeah, I do.
I remember
yes,
it all.
I know you you remember everything, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't remember as much as you can. You remember everything.
Civ.
It was fun, though. Playing Jason Quartermain was fun for the 3.5 years I played.
So I remember, speaking of hair, the pictures that I can recall from seeing you in the 70s, you had like a real, like a nice kind of parted in the middle, maybe? Am I right?
Yeah, we had a sort of the shag, sort of
sure,
the mullets.
You had the big collars.
We had all that stuff. But like I said, if you're going to span five decades, you've got to stay in the fashion. You can't just hang on. It's like if the Scott Baldwin character disappeared for 5 years and I came back looking the same, it'd be like, what, did they thaw him out?
Right.
What has he been in a refrigerator?
Yeah.
He looks the same. Nothing's changed.
Wasn't Stavros frozen?
Well, if you're really frozen, then you can't come out in now a pink T-shirt. But,
That's awesome.
So when did you – was there a conscious choice to go from, like, laying down to vertical?
Yeah, that was about in the 90s. All of a sudden, the crew cuts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, I have to go back and say, if you're going to go through these decades, you got to follow this. I tried to bring, what I wanted to do is bring the little pencil mustache back.
Ooh.
But it's
what,
not.
You mean
just
right,
like running the top
like
of the lip?
The little Errol Flynn.
What, you
Clark
mean right
Gable.
Now?
Yeah, I'd like to bring it back
like
now.
Like right now.
I pitched it the other day to Frank. I said, listen, the goatees are over.
Yeah.
They're over.
Okay.
Somebody is going to bring back the Errol Flynn, Clark Gable pencil mustache. Why can't it be me?
Why
not?
He
Scotty?
Didn't go. He.
No, but hold
it's
on, Ken.
Never going to happen.
Goatees have come and gone a few times. The pencil mustache has never come back.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think
so
it's dead.
It's due.
No,
but
I think it's what
let
it
me
is.
No. Now you take the pencil and you mix it with a nice ascot, and now you've got a guy.
You got a guy in the 40s.
Yeah. What? So what? He could be a character that's been around town for 40 years. Now he's
like you,
like me,
right?
Would it be so bad? If
so I mean, would you have to? Would Scotty have had to have some sort of personality change to then?
No,
make
because
sense
he's,
of the ascot and pencil.
No. Because he is kind of. If people watch Turner Classic Movies and they watch General Hospital, they'll say that Scotty character. He kind of is a fast talker. He kind of uses a lot of those words like "What are you driving at?" That from the 40s that people don't hear anymore. Like that's
right.
Old hat.
What are you driving at?
What are
right.
you? That's old hat and
off
all
the
these
rails.
Kind of expressions. So I use them. I work them in.
Ah, yeah.
And that is so. Yeah, he could eventually show up with an ascot, and who would say boo?
Right.
That's right.
Yeah. Is he? So he's still a functioning attorney, correct?
Oh, yes. He's still. Yes. He's still.
What is his current title?
He's just Scott Baldwin.
Attorney at law?
Esquire.
Oh, yes. No, not attorney at law. It's
attorney
Esquire.
Attorney at law, Esquire.
So you've been a defense attorney. Were you ever the DEA?
I was the DEA
yeah.
A few times. And then I was a special prosecutor.
Ooh.
So,
so you've been on both sides of the law.
Yes. And yeah. I've defended a lot of people. And I'm still defending characters on the show right now.
Do you have a preference? Do you prefer to be working for the state or working for you know, individual clients?
I would, if I had my way. I have always said when I was the district attorney, the goal was for me to start cleaning up some of the crime in town. Sort of like the Scotty suit is nothing more than the Batman suit,
right?
You know, that he is a crime fighter. But
so yeah, you'd basically get rid of me and
get, well,
and
you get
Sonny.
Rid of half the cast. So,
well, but that's
they're all criminals.
Well, because,
according to Scott Baldwin.
Well, because that was always a good, you know, because when Rick was the DA, he was, you know, pitted opposite Sonny a lot. So on our show, if Sonny is a,
and they
a
were
powerful,
brothers supposedly,
right?
Right?
Well, yeah. So that's a powerful force. Sonny's a powerful force, and the opposite side of that is either going to be maybe the police commissioner, or it's going to be the DA, it's going to be somebody that is at odds against him. So that's a good place to be dramatically and story wise, probably too, right?
Yeah, I just think that you have to make a few arrests and make it stick.
It to be somewhat effectual.
Wait a minute, hold on. Because when I came back and you just said the criminals, are you Franco's dad?
I am Franco's father.
Has that always
what
been?
What is that even?
Or is
how
that
does
a,
that even
is that
how'd that happen?
Is that revisionist?
They went back and they kind of gave Heather and I a certain rendezvous that we had at Kelly's Diner somewhere back in time that we had this illegitimate Franco.
Got it.
So
he's a criminal.
Well, he had some mental issues, didn't he? There was a tumor removed that made him do some crazy stuff.
Okay, so now right. He's okay though now?
He's okay.
He's okay,
but
in your judgment as a DA and prosecutor, he's okay now. Just give him free? Would you let him out of jail free?
Well, I did because you know the father son thing. You have to look the
other
way.
But with about being the father, would you keep him in there or would you let him go?
I don't know what I'd do with him really.
Did you ever have a stern talking to him? Why'd you kill him? Like
I try to, but you know. Yeah. It's
hard to have a stern talking to Roger. Roger doesn't stay stern for very long.
Yeah, just tell me some stories from the old days, man. Just give me one good one. Just give me something good.
Well, we have there's a lot of great stories that happened in the days, like in the 80s when it was pretty crazy down here, as everybody knows. There was a lot of, you know, we were known as the show that everybody wanted to be on. I mean, you know, everybody, Milton Berle, Liz Taylor. General Hospital was
kind of... Is it true, Milton Berle?
Milton Berle was here. He played a character.
No, is his the thing that everyone...
Oh, we don't know that.
Okay. I wasn't sure if that he like walked into a room and was like, hi, I'm here.
I'm Milton.
Just so you know,
it is true. Yeah, what is. There's a big, great joke between Milton and Victor Mature, right? They, you know, Milton only roll out part of it, you know?
This is stupid. But this show was known for, you know, it was like, it was a party. It was a party here. It was fun. Everybody wanted to be here. And it had a great reputation.
Yes, it did. And it was fun. And we just, today, as you guys know, we had a visit from John Stamos was down.
He's in the building.
That's right. That's right.
He's in the building. And he, you know, he had a very nice little run here as Blackie Parrish.
Yeah, how long was he on the show? Do you remember?
Yeah, he was here like 3 years, four years or so.
He had a run,
and
yeah.
He was like Scott Baldwin's like... like Perry Mason had Paul Drake. That was he was like my guy.
Yeah.
Oh, he was like he was like your almost like your PI or something.
Yeah, and you know I always tell the story. Back in the day, we used to the characters had their own music, and
oh wow.
And we would when I'd come into the room, there'd be a boom 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 boom. I had like a little dangerous music.
Yeah, yeah.
And John would come bounding into the room, and they would say, "We need to keep you two together," and I would have to turn. Pull him aside and say, John, you do know that I have a specific walk and a specific music, so you need to stay behind me.
Did he didn't have some? He didn't have his own music. It was
no,
your music
just,
superseded.
He had sort of a dee 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 dee,
like some little kind of like Bradford's music,
yeah, like a little
like a little fairy flying around,
frolic music. So yeah, but they don't have that. The characters don't have their little music anymore.
The couples have like a
couples
have
couples
have
a little song,
yeah, that we'll play whenever there's.
John was here. He's doing a show, I guess, about that time, the heyday of daytime in the 80s.
Yeah, he's doing a show based on kind of him, a kid from Orange County, coming on to this number one soap opera and what was going on. He was a, you know, kid sort of flipping hamburgers, and then he got on a big show. This was a big break.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's he's creating a show based around that.
Yeah, I haven't seen John since, you know, back in the day when we would hang out, and I'm like, hey, Mr. Stamos, how are you? And he's like, call me John, you bastard.
Oh, did he say that?
Yeah,
that's
he goes,
awesome.
Call me John.
You bastard.
Because he just had a kid, so he's like, goes, man, we're just getting old. We're just getting old.
Oh, wow.
But it was always great to see him, and, you know.
Yeah, the other story I love to tell is he was, when he was hanging around, he used to spend the night at my house, and, you know, we would be up a little later because he was 10 years younger and he was a kid. And then when I'd come out in the morning, all I could hear in the other room was the Flintstones. And he'd just be in there watching cartoons. And,
that's,
you know,
amazing.
Wow.
He was so young back, just a kid, you know, trying to learn everything.
That's awesome.
From the master that I, you know.
You are like Yoda.
Yeah. Yoda?
You're like Yoda.
Yoda.
That's, yeah. Yoda. You
you're
know,
a,
from
you're
Star
a sage.
Wars. You're the mentor. Yeah. You're a mentor for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I know Maurice gets a lot of the credit, but you paved the way.
I had to pull Maurice aside when he came on the show and give him a little, you know, information.
A little talking to?
I did a little talking to about protecting his character.
Oh,
he
yeah.
He still talks about that. I was the first guy. Listen, I know you're new, but here's my advice.
So, whatever, however you said it to him, he uses that same voice now.
I know.
He's like, Jason, get over here. What are you doing, Jason?
Well, but we all know that story between you and him, but there was a bit of another love story that was very big in the 90s.
In the 90s,
Jason Sonny story.
There was a little Brokeback
These
Mafia.
These guys would lock eyes and just speak.
Oh yeah, it's just hot. Well, you know what I love about you, Kent, is that you're
Kent. Don't hate our relationship.
Oh, I love the Sonny Jason relationship.
Sure you do. As he's raising his fist to the sky right now.
Well, I love that Ken's not a whisperer on stage. Yeah. You know, some people go up on stage and think they're doing single camera, and that the proximity of the cameras and the mics are super close, and so it's all. And, you know, and sometimes that works depending on what the scene is. But what I like about you is that you're a full voice guy.
Well, I come in, but that was the whole back in the day, Jane Elliott and all of the people. And, you know, I came into a scene with Maurice and I, well, and all of a sudden Maurice holds his ears like I've broken his eardrums now. I said, I'm sorry, Maurice.
So did I offend you?
Did I not come in whispering?
he's so loud.
But to loud. Actually hold his eardrums, like I've offended his eardrums. I'm too loud. Wow,
yeah, it's crazy. You talk too loud. Sometimes I'll be like, are we taping right now? Because I hear kid at the end of the stage.
Yeah, what's he talking about?
We're taping. Why are you whispering? Because he's not.
Yeah, there's a certain level that you can whisper before Craig, our stage manager, will hush us up, right?
Right. Yeah. Right.
If it gets to his ear, it's,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
We could go on.
Oh, man.
You guys only paid me for the hour.
Yeah, I know. It's been.
I've given you an extra 10 minutes.
His curfews. I just heard his Vespa start.
Do you have automatic start
on the Vespa?
Yes, of course.
Is it a button or do you have a remote?
No, it's a little button. You just press the button. You know, I don't know why people find such humor in making fun of my Vespa. I really don't. I explained it to you.
Why
do you idiots about an hour ago, you heckle and jackals? That it is a way of life, and people.
No, I understand, but why aren't you sponsored by them?
You know, I keep hashtagging them, and I keep waiting for the call. You know, I did get. I was very impressed. I got a response from Turner Classic Movies. I said I had a little pencil mustache a couple of weeks ago, and I was watching a movie, and I said. The guy in the thing had a pencil mustache. I had one on, and I think maybe I'm watching too much TCM. And they
retweeted
and
you?
Said,
yeah.
"Agreed." But I was flattered that they acknowledged
that's amazing.
And this is one you had grown?
I grew one. Yes, yeah, I had it up until about 5 days ago, but I knew it wouldn't fly down here.
Is there any pictures to validate that?
Oh yeah,
I have
Twitter.
A picture
of my
phone. That's awesome, Ken. Man, thank you so much. I know you came in early. Ken came in early for us today.
Of course, we appreciate it. But all of everybody that's out there that's going to be at our General Hospital fan event.
Yes,
right? Like I said, Lynn Herring and I are doing something.
Yeah,
that's right.
So over.
You're on the Twitter.
Yes, on the
so
Twitter.
So if people aren't,
you guys are doing a show later on over there, right?
Yeah, Fan Club Weekend is what?
July 28th. You guys are. In the afternoon on Saturday, July 28th.
4 o'clock. Yeah.
4 o'clock.
4 p.m.
Steve and I are 9 to midnight.
Right.
The
late show.
If they were looking for tickets for your event, where could they find them? Do you know?
On Twitter?
We'll put a link up for you.
Okay.
And what is your Twitter handle for anyone that might not know it?
Just at Ken Schreiner.
That's pretty easy to remember.
That's a good one.
Way to stay on brand.
At Legend of GH.
That's the legend. Yeah.
All right, Ken. I will concede that maybe if our hairline was similar, that you could accuse me, and I might have to say, maybe I.
Hair
you and
plagiary?
I have a little bit of this similar hairstyle.
Well, it maybe not today, but you certainly have.
Yeah.
You
just want to emulate people that you respect.
And
I respect you,
and,
Ken.
You know, we are in style. So if you're in style,
okay.
You know, you're going to look people that...
You
either,
are in style. According to my wife, I am not.
You're not?
No.
Well, then, you know, like it was high and tight on the side. So
sure.
That style is fading away to giving way to...
What's next?
I'm wondering. I'm always looking. What's coming?
You're a trendsetter.
I'm trying to get on. Get something ahead of everybody. But like I said, the pencil mustache. But it's
I'm not sure that's.
I ran it up the flagpole and nobody is saluting.
Only did you run it up the flagpole here, you ran up the flagpole to Turner Classic Movies, and they said no
thanks.
It belongs in a certain time.
Well, I think it's synonymous with creepers now. So you got to be careful, you know.
But mark my words. I may be, you guys may be around, and it may appear, and you'll say, he was right. It did come back.
Okay,
it did.
If you get it passed, I'll join you. I'm not sure how well I can grow a mustache, but. Do you have to get long mustache hairs?
No. It's if you go back, just look at like Errol Flynn.
I love Errol Flynn.
I mean, these were the swashbuckling actors of their day. Yeah. They all had the little pencil mustaches.
So you just got to shave the and just keep it a little
bit hair.
There's
about three different ways it can come this way. Then you got the more sophisticated William Powells and these guys that had another version of the pencil mustache. It's like the goatees. How many different ways can you do a goatee now?
Yeah, a lot. Yeah.
And,
look at Bradford.
Yeah, they should be retired.
Exactly.
I'm not sure what this is.
Look at Bradford.
It grows thickest around the goatee area. Frank told me to grow it, though.
He did?
He did. He told me to grow it, and he hasn't told me to shave it. So.
I'm gonna push for the pencil mustache, okay?
We could do it.
We're going to – when we release this podcast, we're going to put hashtag Scotty Baldwin pencil mustache. Bring back the pencil. That's not a good slogan at all.
Bring back the pencil.
All right, Ken. Your time's up, man.
Signing off.
Thank you, Ken Schreider.
Thank you so much, Ken.
I appreciate it, man.
Fun. Always a pleasure. Thank you.
That was so creepy. I don't know what happened.
Especially after having Ken Schreiner in here, he just got creepier.
That's the thing is, I painted a pencil mustache on, and I'm a total creep now. I was trying to bring in different.
Yeah, just stick with one.
You know, different eras, basically.
Okay.
Is what I was trying to do.
Yeah, that was really a poor effort.
It got a little crazy. God, Ken's amazing.
Yeah, it was great, man. He can talk forever, and I have such great conversations with the guy.
Well, and I love, he is incredibly funny, but I love how he makes you laugh in particular.
Yeah, he just makes me laugh, man.
Well, because the limits of podcasts is that you can't see his expressions, but you all know his expressions so well. Like, I imagine you folks listening, you know what Ken Schreiner looks like when he talks. So imagine his expressions when he's saying some of that kind of stuff.
I know, it's great.
Because, it's great.
And he should honestly go on the road.
Oh, he should.
He could put together a one-man show about stories and stuff.
Oh, man.
It'd be amazing.
Awesome, I'd go.
Yep.
All right, so we got our tweet. So we got our tweet and the question. We're kind of wrapping it all
up. Were you on a budget? What, are we at a budget now?
No, but it was a tweet that I liked, but it's also a question.
Okay.
And going, and you know, in this episode with Ken, we're talking about the history of our show.
Yeah, let's do that.
And it seemed a really good kind of all-encompassing.
Let's keep it positive note.
Yeah, so it's from John D. Brewer. Thank you, John.
Johnny.
And so he's got a question for Steve for the podcast. What was your favorite memory of the late, great Anna Lee?
Oh, my goodness. That is...
I know that. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of memories, and you know, when I came on the show, I think she had been gone for just a year or two.
It's such a big part of my life coming on the show. She was so awesome.
Yeah,
she was always just so gracious and sweet and elegant, and you know, she was somebody who did a lot of movies.
Yeah.
Back in the day, under contract
at
studios, and she just was so amazing, such an amazing woman, and. You know, it's funny because it became like a family here, right? With Stewart and Leslie and David Lewis first, and then John Engle, and then Anna Lee, and then Wally and Sean, and then Billy and Gerald Hopkins played. But it was the Quartermains. It was just, we were a family unit.
Yeah.
And one of the best times for me was always at holidays, right?
Right.
Because I didn't have a big family, but then we'd have these holidays. And, you know, you'd see the sets changing, getting ready for the holidays, and you knew it was going to be a big, either a fight or something was going to happen
right.
with the Quartermains. And Anna Lee was the best, and she had her chair, right? She had her motorized wheelchair.
Yeah.
And here's the funny story is she didn't have the same chair at home. So when she got here.
She'd get used to it.
She didn't know how to drive it.
Right.
So Craig, our stage manager, would be like, Anna Lee is coming. Anna Lee is coming. He gave us a warning.
You could hear her before you could see her.
Because it was like a 16-year-old driving a clutch for the first time. Because one time she ran right into Leslie and like took her legs out or something.
Oh my gosh.
So we would all get like strategically behind furniture until
just give her space.
Until she came in and just like stopped the chair. It was amazing.
Did she know that?
Yo, dude, she was laughing all the time.
Oh.
She was like, she'd go like a little like, you know, she was so fun, dude. It was amazing. She was so cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
But thanks for that question.
Yeah, thanks, John.
She was such a beautiful woman inside and out, and I just loved her to death.
Yeah. Yeah, so. That's the great thing. I, you know, one of the One of the many fun things about doing this is that I'm hearing stories that I've never heard before, fascinated by it, and it's just, it fills out the story. I just
yeah, you know, and stories. It's cool because look, in it's just like in life, right? I mean, seasons change. You go through seasons yeah. in your life, and yeah. and we had the Quartermains. You know, we were such a family unit, and then unfortunately, the stories kind of turned differently, and you know, and then the characters don't work together much anymore. So right. you kind of leave that season in your life, and then
yeah.
like you came on, and we were working together a lot, and then it became me, you, and Kelly, and then
yeah.
me, you, and Maurice, and me, yeah. you, and Laura, and Kelly, and you know, so we had kind of our little own family unit and season. So it's just cool to be, I guess, a part of all different types of seasons for me,
sure.
you know, and go through that progression. And, you know, guys like Ken, good gosh.
Right.
I mean, 41 years here. It's amazing. And,
yeah.
and we barely scratched the surface. But,
yeah,
John, thank you so much for your tweet question.
Tweet question. And that's going to do it for us this week. Thanks for
that's
hanging
right.
out with us. Another fun time for us. Hope it was a fun time for you. We will see you next week.
StoneColdAndTheJackal.com. Out.
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now. Save